on the agenda, the item we have is public comment, which usually we have at the beginning and the end of the meeting. I'd like to suggest that we do tonight, since Graham Parker is hopefully going to be here momentarily, is to just keep the public comment at the end, which we will still do that. And just for 1 minute, this is not on the agenda, but I would like to ask you, Sarah, do you have any updates? Sarah is our IT chief and co-vice chair. We have 4 vice chairs here. So if you want to just let us know the status of that.
Okay, do we do that right now?
Sure.
All right. Yeah. So did everyone get an email yesterday about the Facebook page?
Yes.
Okay. And there's a sheet floating around. There's copies of it. It's just an Excel sheet that I've started as a, you know, assigning different weeks to different people where you're responsible for posting or commenting on the Facebook page one time. So it's one person is responsible for posting something and 4 people are responsible for commenting on that, and it's fine to actually have a discussion that goes beyond your required assignments. I've just kind of assigned some stuff through the beginning of January, I think through the first week of January, just to get it going. But I want to make sure that everyone has liked the page and has accepted the request to be an administrator, because you can't comment on the page, you can't post things on the page if you're not an administrator. And if you don't know what that means, I'm happy to go over stuff in more detail with people. I can either email something or just show you on a computer at some point. But I encourage everyone to go on the page, make sure you understand how to be an administrator versus your own personal Facebook page, because you do need to log on to the Community Advisory Board page as the Community Advisory Board, not as yourself. If you post as yourself, it won't go out to the people who have liked the page. It only goes out, or it only sits on the page. So you have to go to the page to see that post. It makes just like everyone just like sit down and play with it a little until you're comfortable with it. I'm happy to answer questions. So that's where we are with that.
Do you think Graham is going to?
Are you ready for Graham?
Because
I told
him. Oh, good, perfect.
Yeah. Just let me make a little housekeeping note too, please. In January, we have no meeting in December, and in January the meeting is at the Society for Ethical Culture. And for those of you who don't know, it's something west.
Central Park West.
West Central. Sixth. And it'll be on the agenda too. The top of this will change to show you where it is. And we usually have a library on the 6th floor.
Is it possible to call in to a meeting, or only
I don't
if it's
know
here?
About there. I don't know that we have a hookup there.
It's a grand old space.
Grand Parker?
Yay.
Don't leave yet.
Do you need the lights low, Graham?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Let's see.
For people who've arrived late, please don't forget to sign in. Perhaps we can send them to sheet out.
So. Just for a general introduction, Graham Parker is the general manager of WQXR. And I think Graham's going to start with the general presentation about the station, and then we thought we'd have 20 minutes at the end for questions. But
great. Sort of plan. Thank you all. Real pleasure to be here. I've been here in a while, so it's fun. The group has gone bigger. So, yes, I'm going to spend a few minutes talking this overview of WQXR. Some of you might know this already. For others, it might be new. I apologize if it's kind of in between both, but hopefully you'll walk away with something you don't know. We're going to talk a little bit about Month of Mozart, and I am actually going to talk a little bit about the instrument drive as well. So here we go. So this is the overview of WQXR, and again, if you know this, I apologize. But so one statement I did want you to all walk away with, that we are the most listened to and largest classical station in the United States. That's a big difference from when we first started here. 4 years ago, but we have safely been in that category For most of the last 12 months, KUIC, our colleagues out at LA, beat us the month of July. I could kill them, but we just got our leadership position back in August, so very secure there. So quick history lesson here. 1936 was when WQXL was founded, owned by the sold to the New York Times Company in 1944. And then in 2009 was when we became a member part of the New York Public Radio family, sold by the New York Times. And that's when we did a major kind of relaunch of everything with QXR, the website, obviously established a whole new service here. You know, 2013, we continued to grow and acquired our brand new station in Westchester County, WQXW 90.3, in July of this year. So a 76-year history, and a very exciting one at that. Obviously, the big change in 2009 when we went from New York Times ownership to public ownership. On air, these are kind of current numbers. This is kind of an average kind of on air month. It's pretty strong. QM obviously is just kind of total numbers of people listening per week. And the AQH is average quarter hour. That's been at any 15 minutes how many people are listening to WQXR. This fluctuates a lot. In October, it was 23,000 AQH. It shifts around. If you want to know how these things are calculated, we can do a three-hour seminar on that later. But I don't want to get ground into that. But
why does it matter?
Why does it matter?
Every 15 minutes, yeah.
It's just a way of calculating. They can slice it up and dice it up any which way you like. But that's in radio terminology, that's a pretty standard way of QM and AQH are two very standard metrics that every radio station looks at. It's also the way that salesmen sell the station. That's often one of the more important things. Digitally, the numbers keep growing and growing. Unique visitors to the website in 2013 were 180,000. It's quite a lot. Page views, as you can see, and the stream sessions on an average month, 1.2 million. When we started, when I started 3 years ago, it was up about 400,000. So colossal growth in the stream sessions. And that is certainly proportionally, a lot of it's in and around this area, but we're seeing increasing national and international coverage for WQXR. So people are really finding the brand and really enjoying what they're hearing and reading about and listening to and streaming, et cetera. So there you go, actually, there's the graph. Pretty impressive growth. This is slightly updated. 190,000 uniques in last month. And the little arrow at the bottom there, 1 hour and 53 minutes average time spent on WQXR.org. That's a very long time. Normally, because most people are streaming. But we've really increased the amount of time on site. That was one of the challenges of the redesign, was to get people to stay and read, vote in a poll, take part in some kind of social media interaction. That's really, really grown in the last few years. Stream sessions, as we said, actually, that's slightly higher, 1.355 in October. So these numbers keep getting higher and higher. And that actually doesn't include the holiday stream, which will start December 1st. So we expect the numbers to go up even higher. So when we've done these pop-up, we call them pop-up streams, they normally have really galvanized additional listening. We are actually also covered, apart from listening to us on WQXR.org and the app, you can also find us on TuneIn Radio and iHeartRadio, two really strong aggregator platforms, and we've seen really, really good growth from those two. They've been really successful partnerships. So, in addition to the WQXR FM traditional classical offering, we have a number of other streams that we're extremely proud of. Q2 Music started 4 years ago and is our, as it says, 24/7 stream of new music, contemporary music, classical, contemporary. We will allow people just past to make it onto the stream. It's a little warm, we'll let you. We prefer fully warm, cold, not so much. But it's a great entry point for new listeners, for folks who know a lot of the classics and want to be challenged and listen to something they don't know. Because often I regularly turn on Q2 and have absolutely no idea what I'm listening to. That is not the case on QXR. I'll mainly recognize what we're playing, but this is a chance to really experiment. And we found a lot of listeners jump back and forth between QXR and Q2. We've recently been experimenting with festivals on Q2, a chance to dive really deeply on a particular composer or an anniversary. So on Friday was Benjamin Britten's 100th anniversary. Well, he would have been if he was alive. So we did a full 24-hour marathon on Benjamin Britten. on John Zorn's 60th birthday. He's very much alive. John actually hosted a 24-hour marathon on Q2, which was quite a coup because he doesn't like to speak on the radio. So we got him to speak for an 8-hour chunk, and then we repeated it 3 times. But really successful. We've done a Rite of Spring marathon. Well, we just played the Rite of Spring on the 100th anniversary of that premiere. Huge audience reaction, a positive reaction. And we will continue to do more of these as the imagination of the team allows, but it's been very successful. We started OperaVore, which is an all-opera channel. This we started last January. It originally had started out as a blog, and then we expanded it to more editorial. And then a year and a half ago, we decided to launch it as a full-time stream, so 24/7 opera. And this has been a real way to dedicate ourselves to the very loyal and active opera crowd who just want to listen to opera music, opera. There is an absolute divide between the audience. You either generally love it or you generally hate it. That's what we see on QXR at 1 o'clock on a Saturday when we traditionally have played the opera. We do traditionally play the opera. I coined this terminology, flock and flee. You either flock to it or you flee far away from it. So Opera War was a way of just providing those who flock to it a place where they can feel safe and secure. So many of you also know the Green Space, and hopefully you've come to many events there. We have programmed a real wide series of events in the Green Space and continue to. Big names, intimate space, and it's captured forever. There is just a sampling of some of the talent we've presented. Really excitingly, actually, this past Saturday, we presented our first kids' concerts in the Green Space. Very successful. We did 2 kids' concerts of the Magic Flute, a kids' version of the Magic Flute, part of the month of Mozart. Sold out, an 11:30 and a 2:30 show. We decided, therefore, to add another kids' show in December with the Canadian Brass, who are really well-known brass quintet. So we have a 4:30 show there when they were going to do a 7 o'clock show anyway, so they were in the space rehearsing. I was asked them to do something else. The price was right, zero. We are going to experiment with more of those in the coming seasons. I think it's a really important audience that we, to date, have not been capturing. But it's not only the kids, but it's also their parents and their grandparents. So Saturday we saw a nice smattering of grandparents bringing their grandkids, and also just parents bringing their kids. And also in this part of Manhattan specifically, there's not a lot. The LPR on Bleecker, La Poisson Rouge, has some kids' activity. The 92Y Tribeca, when it was opened, had a really strong kids' music program on a Sunday morning. That space is closed down. So there's not much around here, actually. Yeah, they don't do a lot of performance space. They don't do kind of like presenting just concerts for kids. So it's something we're thinking about as a space, a little thing we could slot right into. So I know that I have young kids, and I used to take them to 92Y Tribeca on a Sunday morning when you're pulling your hair out and you have nothing else to do. They really enjoyed that. So in terms of other things we have innovated on, is Carnegie Hall Live is probably our signature achievement in the live broadcasting space. This is a 12-concert series that we do completely in partnership with Carnegie Hall. This is broadcast across the country live. It's the only live national classical season series there is. And when I say in total partnership with Carnegie, this isn't one of these things where we just call them up and say, hey, you would like to broadcast that concert, and they say, this is how much you have to pay the stagehands, and this is how much you have to pay this, and and we pay write checks and come in. We split all the costs equally. We get to look into their programming calendars a season or two in advance, decide what we're gonna capture, et cetera, et cetera. So we've had some incredible opportunities to broadcast the Berlin Phil. On the right is Gustavo Dudamel with the Simon Bolivar Orchestra of Venezuela. We've had Rene and Susan's recital. This season we went to open with the Philadelphia Orchestra, but unfortunately the strike at Carnegie unfortunately took care of that. But this season we'll have the Vienna Philharmonic, the Munich Philharmonic. We had San Francisco Symphony last week, and so it will go on. And it's been a really, really important chance to establish the WQXR brand on a national level, which it really has done. Other things we've been very proud of. This summer, we inaugurated some other new things. The Proms, which is a very famous classical music series from London, broadcasts out of the Royal Albert Hall, which is that space in the picture there. About 5,000 people come to each of the Proms concerts. There are about 120 Proms concerts from July through September.
They do one every single day. If you haven't been to one in London, you really should go. It's kind of like quite an experience. Not just kind of a Brit and awfully proud of them, but they're very cool concerts. It's kind of hard to tell, but the ground floor of where the kind of right where the stage is, they take all the seats out of people to stand. That's the deal. They're called prom concerts because you promenade, you literally stand there and walk around if you want. And the rest of the seats are sold with seats, actually, literally seats. But the other ones you stand and it's very cheap. The BBC broadcasts all of them, and these have never been available outside the UK, especially in the US. And I negotiated a specific deal with the BBC, and we were able to bring them to WQXR this summer for the very first time. So we were really proud. People seem to really get it, which we were really excited to see. So we had a daily tea time excerpt of the proms. We had a full concert on a Saturday, and Q2 Music, as our contemporary channel, was able to take a lot of the contemporary music that the proms plays every year. They do a lot of commissioning, so we had a great space for that too. Other things from London. It's not a total pad here. I just happened to speak the language, so it was easier to work on that. Are you paying attention? We also inaugurated a new cooperation with the Royal Opera House. This also, for the very first time, WQXR has made available the Royal Opera House broadcasts from the recent season at ROH in London. And these are absolute top quality opera performances, great casts, great productions. And we also formed a new relationship with Symphony Space on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, where we co-present now 5 of the HD operas from London as well. These aren't live, it's not as, with a time shift from London would be a little complicated, so we do them on a Sunday at 3 o'clock, which seems to work for everybody, and they are of, some were of last season, but 3 were of the current season. We had one on Sunday, really well sold, and we end on December 22nd with Parsifal, which should be really exciting. So this is something that we are going to continue. London have been rather impressed by the ticket sales that we've been able to produce, so that I'm actually going there in a couple of weeks to discuss more of what we can do with the Royal Opera House, because they seem itching to do more with us. So that's kind of an overview of kind of where we've gone to so far in general. I just want to spend a couple of minutes talking about the festivals we've done. I hope some of this imagery is familiar to you. This was Beethoven Awareness Month we started in 2011. It was my first chance to kind of get the team to focus on a specific month-long festival. Traditionally, classical music stations don't do this. My program director, who's responsible for the ratings, as well as many, many other things, normally when you ask a program director to think about this, they'll tell you no, because that's just not what the audience wants. And he's very logical, and he's entirely correct. But I felt that in New York and with WQXR, we need to push the envelope a little bit and encourage the listener to go beyond their comfort zone a bit. So Beethoven Awareness Month was born, and this was a chance for us to get really deep and really focused, as well as have some fun with a particular composer. We chose Beethoven because the music is extraordinary, and as we kind of joked in a staff meeting, we think he can take the humor as well. If not, he had no way to particularly protest, but we think he could take it. And Jeff Spurgeon, our morning host, actually came up with a really, I think, great way of framing this, is that all of these festivals have been very highbrow and very lowbrow, deliberately. And the thing we never, ever do is make fun of the music, ever. We take that very seriously. We'll make fun of the person or his life or his story, but we'll never make fun of the music. So Beethoven Awareness Month was born and really stood out, I think, in New York and across the country and world with this amazing campaign that was developed by an agency we work with, the Media Planning Agency, and Obey was born of Beethoven using the Shepherd Fairey imagery, which Mr. Fairey gave us permission to do. So we repeated that in 2012 as well. And we also decided that so that was month long. It wasn't every moment of the day was Beethoven. There was a piece every couple of hours. We did some live broadcasts. Then we wanted to push the envelope even further. How about playing everything a composer wrote without stopping? Do nothing else but that. So we did that too. This was really successful. This was Bach 360. So in March 21st of last year, we did 11 days of everything Bach wrote. Again, I had to pick up my program director from the floor and convince him that it was a good idea. It turned out to be a very, very good idea. People really got it and understood why we were trying it, And that they should hang in there and keep listening. And they did, in droves. And digitally especially, we saw an enormous lift from the Bach festival. These things take enormous amounts of planning, enormous amounts of work. We have to be careful how often you do them, because the audience do get a little bit fidgety, but we think we held firm, but we also haven't done anything too significant since then, apart from Mozart, which we're in now. So we will think about other composers that can take a full-on marathon treatment. There aren't too many that we think people would want to listen to candidly without stopping. I think others would get a little tricky, but we're not quite there to decide that fully yet, but Bach was a big success. We've done other shorter festivals, Wagner, Grabbing by the Horns. As you can tell, we try and have some fun. People take classical music terribly seriously, which is very serious, but it's also you can certainly have fun at it. So we had two great composers celebrate 200th anniversaries this year. Wagner was one, and Verdi was the other. And also, we're in the middle right now of Month of Mozart, which was a way of shifting just from Beethoven to a different composer. Amadeus was the very clever a campaign that, again, Ivor came up with. The idea of that within everyone is a genius. That, you know, Mozart was, of course, was a complete genius, but in essence, we're all genii. Oh, there's a commercial that was quite low. So, you know, the goals of these kinds of festivals is it's a great entry point for WQXR. We try really hard to, both with the social media campaigns, the modest ad campaign budgets we have, with the graphics that I will develop, that try and make it possible that if you don't know what WQXR is, or you don't really think you know much about Mozart, that you could learn and kind of come and enjoy, basically enjoy yourself. And the audience building is very, very important. And, you know, we've established this November tradition of doing a composer focus. I think we're going to stay with that. It seems to be working. It has a nice build, actually, into the holidays, which will start on December 1st. And one of the most important measures we've seen in terms of how does one measure audience building or entry point is we're able to track on our website the numbers of new users that we see as a proportion of total usership. We can know the percentage of new users. Since the second Beethoven campaign in 2012, we've seen that number go from about 25% to about 33% of all users the WQXR on new. That is a very, 7% is pretty big growth in just raw numbers. So we think, and also that number is staying there. It's not going down again once we finish the month. So people are trying it, staying there, and seem to like it. That was one of the big goals of this, is to get people to try QXR and stick with it, as opposed to Pandora or some other classical music station they might like. So specifically with Mozart, we've done, we've started off with an All Mozart Day on November 1st. The rest of the month we've had daily themes. We have had a go at defining the 20 most essential Mozart recordings as defined by our programming team, which I think they've done an amazing job of sorting through truly one of the greatest discographers of any composer to try and find what they would regard as the best Mozart recording. So every day, and you can go on our website and check out what you should own in your collection. We did two really fun live events. We did a screening of Amadeus at Symphony Space, and Elliot Forrest hosted with Murray Abraham, the Academy Award winner for supporting actor in that role, and it was completely sold out and really great. And then on Saturday we did a child-friendly production of the Magic Flute, performed by Amori Opera. So, and then we have one of the remaining events this coming Saturday night. Alan Gilbert conducts the New York Philharmonic in the three final Mozart symphonies, and we will carry that live from Avery Fisher Hall, hosted by Elliot Forrest and Annie Bergen. So, that's right, yeah. And then online, of course, it's really important to have some fun too. We've had videos, online quizzes, playlists, encouraging people to give us their what Mozart means to them, etc., etc. We did have a really fun interactive playlist for the New York Marathon. At every mile marker, you could learn something else about Mozart. We didn't have anyone running the marathon. This is the closest to us, classical music folks, to get to it. And we had a Conducting Business podcast on the Mozart Effect. And the one thing we didn't actually weren't able to do was this last one, which was get Jeff backstage at the Met getting dressed up as Papageno. We will do that at some point. The timing didn't quite work. But actually, the middle one, Mozart's influence on pop, we learned this from Bach. We found, my digital team found the best Mozart guitar shredding videos on YouTube, put them into a collection, and it's the number one thing watched on our website the whole month. We did the same thing with Bach, and people might say, oh, that's really tacky, come on, but you should watch some of these guitarists play. This is no joke. They are genius musicians. I kind of couldn't believe some of the Bach playing I saw in March, and the Mozart playing is amazing. So this is just famous, really famous guitarists shredding Mozart, and it's the number one thing on our website right now. And as you might have seen, the promotion has been really dynamic. It all kicked off with taking the Obey campaign, and as if Mozart was like coming to town and defacing it, and saying, no, Ludwig, it's me. So this was a wild poster campaign that started during October, and then we went, and then we went to the big, big campaign. This is actually a billboard in Williamsburg that I think is still up. It's on the corner of Bedford and something. It's a huge parking lot, and I don't know Williamsburg all that well. But the company that actually owns that billboard gave it to us for trade, for nothing. They loved the graphic, and they really wanted the graphic on their billboard. And lo and behold, that gamble worked out because New York Magazine made that billboard the most in the top right-hand corner of the approval matrix that you see every week in New York Magazine. We were top right. That was top right. So it was a great gamble on their behalf. We were thrilled. They were thrilled. Everyone was happy. So really, really successful. And then as you walk past the green space on your way up, you'll see a really fun window effect on there too. So, before I get into the instrument drive, I just want to stop there for a minute and take questions just on QXR in general, and then we can maybe do a little bit on the instrument drive.
Okay, I've got one.
Sure.
So is QXR in charge of the green space? I think essentially how the green space fits into the structure.
That's a great question. So the green space is, for those who don't know, it's the 120-seat performance space downstairs on the corner of Varick and Charlton. So it's a New York public radio space, and WNYC gets full access to it, WQXR gets full access to it, and the way we kind of get a portion of events that we get to program during the year. And also New York Public Radio also gets to program its own events. So something like the August Wilson cycle that was done during August and September, that was actually produced by NYPR. It wasn't a strictly NYC or a QXL project. But all the classical music events that happen in the green space are programmed by my team. And when Brian Lehrer or Leonard Lopate or Studio 360 or Radiolab, et cetera, do any events in the green space, those are produced by WNYC. So it's kind of, there are three producing bombs. We used to have an overall executive producer. That position is vacant right now. The lady left. And we're in discussions about what to do there. But QXR definitely gets access to the green space pretty much as we need to. I said we get a quota. If we need to go above it, if we can show that the ticket sales will be really strong, normally we are able to add things. So, sure, yeah, pricing is a really great, this is something we've really learned. When I first started, you know, we kept pricing pretty modest, you know, $10, $15, and we thought it was a really good artist. But I'm really so happy with the way that my live events team approaches booking this space. We've managed to really land some incredible artists in the green space for normally exclusive events. So Long Long gave a recital in there, Leif Ove Andersen, who's a really well-known Norwegian pianist. His only New York recital last year was in the green space. We've got some other, I can't get into them right now, we've got some other artists lined up for the remainder of the season who are doing exclusive events in the green space. And we decided to be pretty dynamic with the pricing, to go up to $40 or even $50 for a ticket, because they sell out really fast. Mm-hmm. And we're okay with that. I'm okay with it. I think if people are willing to come up with, to pay that kind of money for 120 people to see Leif Ove Andersen play three Beethoven piano sonatas, no more than 20 feet from him, I think that's something. And again, $50 compared to an orchestra seat at Carnegie Hall, I mean, it's, you know, that's three times cheaper. But again, like the event on Saturday with the kids, that was $15, which again, for a parent of young kids, that's an okay price point for me to bring, you know, my two kids to an event.
Mm-hmm. Was the Complete Gober variation sponsored by the record company? Because that was a pre-event.
That actually was donated by Simona. The gentleman's referring to during the Bach Festival in March, we really wanted to do a free lunchtime concert, actually. And Simona Dinnerstein, who's really well known for playing the Goldberg variations, donated her time, and therefore we were able to donate to everybody else the opportunity to come to hear her do a live free lunchtime concert. So her record company would not involve directly, no. But she saw it as a great opportunity. Because we played it live on the radio too. So.
50 years ago, I attended many WQXR concerts and other performances, and they were, free.
Right.
And I think that when the stations were collecting money to build the green space, they said that it would be a place to invite the public. And they didn't say that there would be charges for anything.
Uh-huh.
That's a tacit complaint, obviously. But what I will say is one of the first few frames had an extract from the history of WQXR.
Uh-huh.
And if anyone else is interested in WQXR specifically and radio in general as I am, I would recommend one of the few books I've ever read in my life called Rebel in Radio, the Story of WQXR, the XR signifying experimental radio, which the frequency modulated mode of radio transmission in 1936 definitely was.
And actually, just to build on that, he's referring to the book by Elliot Sanger, who wrote the book Rebel in Radio. He was the founder of WQXR. He was the one that sold it ultimately to the New York Times. His grandson grandson is David Sanger, the Washington correspondent for the New York Times. It's just the history there. And actually, a cute little bit. If you want to show, this is like one of those things you can show off at cocktail parties. Someone says, like, WQXR, where's it come up with that name? So you can say, actually, 1936, it actually wasn't called WQXR, it was called W2XR, which stood for the fact that you needed two FM radios tuned to slightly different frequencies placed next to each other to get an FM signal. That was the first stereo FM radio station in the country. And it was truly experimental. Eventually, they changed it from 2 to Q because it just rhymed.
I'd be curious about two things. One is the contextualization that you're doing. So you're having this professor say that about, which has been wonderful and I think really adds a dimension to it that helps and is fun. I wish there were more because they repeat if you listen for a while, they're repeating on the loop.
Yep.
And the other thing is, I have a question about the way you're doing the fun drive. Because I know that Naomi Lewin and it feels, you know, it's very structured.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no spontaneity about it, even though it's very smooth. And I was curious about your decision there, because there's a kind of programmed structure that feels almost, I'm just being
honest. Please be honest.
I love the station, I listen all the time. Too slick. it's pre-canned. It's canned.
Yep.
And as good as it is, because it's good,
right.
It doesn't have that one vibe, and I'm curious about
your I think, you know, we hear this not infrequently about the pledge drives, and people say, is there really no other better way that you can raise money?
Amen.
And unfortunately,
to that.
The short answer is no. We have enormous goals to maintain all this programming, and all the kind of innovation we undertake is really made possible in a lot. And when we say this on air, we are not joking. The largest piece of financial support for WQXR comes from members. So we have to hit some pretty significant goals every year. And the best way to do that is to have really excellent producers. And we do mix it up between totally live pitching and we do pre-recorded, what we call pre-recorded hours, where we'll have hosts who have gone into a studio and read a script and we edit it all together to a very finely tuned 60-minute bundle. Because we just don't have enough people to live pitch for every hour of the day. It's just exhausting. We used to do that when I first got here, and you know, I'd be on the radio for hours a day. You know, so many of our colleagues were on the radio. It was just exhausting. And actually, Candy, the audience often don't respond the way you might want. So we try and find that balance. The number one thing to do, and I say to the two board members in the room, we have to hit these goals. We really have to hit these financial goals. It's very important that we do that. If we didn't, we would have to have a different conversation of what we want to cut back on, which we don't want to come back on anything. So hit those goals and then trying to figure out the best way to hit those goals without driving people too crazy. But sometimes pledge drives just drive people crazy.
Well, it just has a different tone.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Is there any, do you think there'd be any interest in a choral music stream?
Yeah.
I don't know. Because you can't really play it, right? The really long works, you probably wouldn't play.
That's a great question. So we do have a
choral music.
So we do have a choral music show, the Choral Mix, on Sunday mornings with Tim Trifle. Yeah, 7 a.m. It is 7 a.m., yes, I know.
Yes.
Sorry. You have to fight. We level our children equally. But some have to get up early than others. We have thought about that, and actually, I'm not sure we would have the bandwidth to take it on. However, we have had conversations with our colleagues in Minnesota at American Public Media. And if, for those who know, Minnesota is a home for a great old tradition of solo choir. There's a real kind of just something in the air there that just produces great, great choirs. And they do have a full-time choral program. Choral screen. And we've thought about taking it and seeing if people respond. The problem is it wouldn't sound like WQXR. It would sound like it came from Minnesota.
You think they could put on instead of that is that organ thing still on and signing it? That organ thing.
We love all our children. Some of them go to bed later than others. We're talking about the organ show, which gets played at midnight on a Sunday. Midnight or 11 p.m. or something. We don't have a full-time organ channel. I think I'd lose my mind if we did that.
No,
we have thought about the choral stream, and I think for a very specific portion of our audience would really enjoy it. Again, choral music is rather like opera. You either love it or you really don't love it. Right. I'm a former choral conductor, so I love it. So I'm therefore not the best person to ultimately make the decision because I'm biased. But my program folks.
I wonder if it could alternate with something else.
I think it's a good question. It's a very good question.
Yeah. Yeah, I was wondering about the figures. The numbers are interesting, but how do they compare to anybody else? I'm sure the streaming is going up everywhere that has a stream because we're all learning how to do it. We all have toys.
Right.
So how does this growth compare to anything?
I can't speak definitively to the growth, to the percentage growths. I know that digitally WQXR is bigger than any other classical radio station in the U.S. I don't know whether our growth has been proportionally larger than anybody else's. I just know that ours has been a very high proportion. And when we look at even KUSC, which is the LA station, or KDFC, which is the San Francisco station, these are number 2 and 3 markets behind New York. Again, the proportion of their terrestrial to digital audience is way below ours. We have just a much, much higher percentage. I think the overall trends in the business, radio listening, I think this is well reported in the press, has seen just a gentle downward pressure. I would say our numbers are kind of holding up across the company. Digitally, though, I think everyone's seeing growth, and we're seeing it too. I think it's hard to know. Should we be shooting higher? I mean, the goals are, trust me, the goals are adjusted higher plenty every year, and we keep can't say there's trustees in the room. We aim to hit them every single time, and so far we haven't missed one. So I was
wondering how you fix the goals, because you kind of have to know what they're related to.
Our CEO and our president and CEO,
it's
Laura,
really done through the CEO. The board doesn't.
Yeah, no,
right. Doesn't set the goals.
Right. No, I mean, our president and CEO sets the goals for major metrics across the whole station, all the stations, NYC, AM and FM, WQXR, the green space. There's obviously membership goals, development goals, underwriting goals, and these are based on performance from the past year, et cetera, as well as looking at market trends.
What I will say about goals is that every year the goals for each category that you mentioned, plus any others, keep going up, and this incredible staff keeps meeting those goals. So it's been really terrific.
I wonder if you could say something about demographics and the age of the listeners, and also a minute on where, I know there's a lot on digital versus radio and the acquisition of Westchester.
Yep.
Where do you see the audience in terms of radio versus online?
Great questions. These are really, really great questions. So the age of an audience is something we get asked about a lot, and our the average age of a WQXR listener on FM, we don't know the digital numbers, is about 54 years old. They're slightly more female than male. They're slightly more male than female, which is interesting, actually, because that's sometimes we actually, one of the reasons we think, we see also that there's a lot of in-office listening as well as at home, but in office, we're also getting a sense that, trying to think of the best way to say this. Some of it comes down to politics. Some people actually think of WQXR as slightly right of center, which is a more masculine thing. More liberal stations are more female, more left of center. WMIC is more left of center. WQXR is perceived, not at all, I mean, by any of our doing, is slightly right of center. More businessmen, you know, we get a lot of fleeing of Rush Limbaugh at noon on ABC. So those are our proportions. On diversity, before I get to diversity, on age, someone say, well, how are you doing compared to Lincoln Center or the Met Opera or the New York Phil? We're definitely younger than they are. On a diversity level, in terms of a white audience and African-American, Hispanic, and other kind of categories that are measured, we had an incredible October where I was very proud. We had a 27% non-white audience for WQXR, which is extremely high. Compared to other classical stations, very high. That was a little bit of a spike month, but it has been trending in a very interesting direction. Still, the proportion of our audience is white, and it's proportionally male, and 54. That's not particularly diverse, but as we've seen ourselves experiment and accept with digital traffic who eventually end up listening to the radio, we have seen some changes in the makeup of our audience, which is that's an exciting trend to see. One of the things we think it might be, or an aspect that certainly supports the diversity, is immigrant communities. And we see this in terms of membership and where our listeners are. We see a lot of listening in Queens, specifically in the Chinese community, because you don't need English to listen to a classical radio station. Or, in fact, if you have marginal English, you can learn a little bit by the very short minute and a half bits that the host speak, as opposed to listening to WNYC, where you might not know what's going on for 25 minutes at a time. So it might be a great way to improve language, or to at least kind of get an entry point into WQXR. To your other question about maybe what you're getting at is, why buy a terrestrial radio station in today's market? Is that maybe a way
well,
to...
Well, or does it lead then to buying a station on Long Island and in New Jersey as,
yep.
as
So when WQXR was sold by The Times and was purchased by New York Public Radio, one of the realities of moving from 96.3, which was the old frequency at WQXR, to 105.9, which is the current frequency at WQXR, is about a 30% loss of signal coverage in the simple contour of the signal. 105.9 is not as strong as 96.3. And that was reflected in the price we paid for 105.9 and the much higher price that Univision paid for 96.3. They paid $33 million. We paid 11.6 to move. 96.3 was valued at $44 million as a price for that position on the FM dial. So we're dealt with a smaller contour of the current signal. One of the things that Laura Walker was very, very clear about, and the board were very clear about when QXR was purchased, that when opportunities became available to make other terrestrial radio purchases in areas that we lost, we would aim to do that. We have been looking really, really carefully at all. There are kind of there are like real estate brokers who sell and buy radio stations, just like you buy an apartment or a house. So we were made aware of this opportunity in Westchester. It took about a year and a half to finish that deal. Just as a contrast, it took 7 weeks to buy WQXR from the New York Times. This was owned by an individual who did not want to sell it. He did, but he needed the money, but it was very, very difficult to do the deal. And it took a year and a half, we finally bought it. We have been looking on Long Island. We have looked in New Jersey. Those are areas where we definitely lost coverage. Up in New City, Rockland County, also a bit of a lack of signal up there. But the dilemma is, when we're seeing so much growth digitally, is you have, because these stations don't come cheap. And so it's just how to balance that decision strategically. Many internet leaders are saying, you know, FM radio is dead, but there is I haven't seen a single piece of research that can actually back that up, that like people, that is the audience dropping off so dramatically for FM radio. It's not. It's maybe 1 or 2% nudging down, but not 25, 35, 45% where digital's just picking it right up. You know, again, our growth digitally has been 200, 300% range. Our terrestrials nudged down a little bit, but nothing to kind of say that we should stop investing in terrestrial radio. So if a station came available on Long Island, for example, that could stretch us back out to the it's past like exit 54 or 55 on the LAE, we kind of get it's like cuts off. If we could go a little further into the Hamptons, that'd be great. You can also buy a station on Connecticut and broadcast over the sound. That's another great way to do it. So.
Economics and the politics of repeaters is contrasted to other stations? Because in rural areas, you have the low
right. number. And we have a couple of repeaters as well. That was part of the sale from the Times. I'm not expert on this, so I'll be careful what I say. Repeaters can be much cheaper to buy because you're not buying a full kind of station.
Small radius.
Right. It does allow you to kind of just boost the signal a little bit. When they become available, again, we can purchase them, but they can only become available when someone decides to sell one. The politics, I don't know if there are politics of repeaters, but...
No, I meant that in policy.
Yes, right.
But what are the aggregate numbers now presented before contrasted to the numbers for the New York Times?
I can give you them, but I think it's a little bit of apples to oranges.
Yeah.
Because so the terrestrial numbers were certainly higher on the old station, but they also had 30% more signal coverage.
Right.
So that's something you have to factor. The digital numbers were nothing in comparison. So terrestrially they were stronger, digitally very much weaker, and now it's a new reality. But also Pandora's didn't exist then. There was a lot of services that didn't exist, so thanks a lot for telling.
Graham, do you want to talk
about the instrument tracker?
Yeah, what time do we have?
You've got 25 minutes, but which is ample time, but we can...
Okay. Can I take one more question? I thought you were waiting patiently.
John. I just wanted to remind you that most of us are terrestrial, and there are not a lot of extraterrestrials around. The digital's great. I use it for people I work with. They can do email, but the internet is a big enigma to them. So they can actually look up things after the fact. Just keep that in mind.
It's
wonderful. Invest in it.
Right.
Keep in mind that most of these people are on this planet.
Yes.
Hard to get the Pandora at an
It's
hard to get the Pandora at an cost.
Although in 2 years' time, you remember 4 years ago Facebook didn't exist. I just want to say that. I mean, 4 years ago Facebook didn't exist. Or you did, but you didn't. No one joined it. Okay. So what we're going to do now? What I'm just going to do now is take you through a project that we actually have not announced yet to the public. So I'm going to appeal to you to not go home and start writing blog posts about this. Sharing this with you in the spirit of any
confidentiality.
Yes, thank you. I really would ask that you don't go home and write a blog post about this. So the instrument drive. This was something that we are launching in March. It's a tremendous opportunity to think of a slightly new aspect of WQXR. Why are we doing this? And I'll take you through what it is in a minute. We hope it will have significant impact in the city. We expect that it's WQXR's unique position as such a large media company and a very powerful microphone that will deliver the results we hope. And it's a great brand-building exercise for WQXR to be placed into the hearts and minds of young students and their families who might not even know that a classical radio station exists in New York City and that they can listen to it free if they're starting to kind of get an interest in classical radio. So here are the basics, what we plan to do. Over a 10-day period, we're going to ask people to donate instruments. If you have one in your basement or in your attic or behind a couch that you've just had no idea what to do with, you once played it, but you haven't played it in 20 years, give it to us. We will refurbish it, repair it, put it in a new case, and give it to a New York City public school kid. It's as simple as that. It'll be throughout the 5 boroughs, and we will be distributing it to New York City public schools, hopefully over a multi-year plan. We are starting 1 year at a time, though. We've got to raise the money each year to do this, but we're definitely committed to 1 year and to a certain component in year two. But it's very simple. 10 days, drop the instruments off, and we'll tell you how to do that in a second. But we hope to get 1,000 instruments. We could be either sorely disappointed or completely overwhelmed. We have no idea. I'll tell you how we got there. The key partners to make this all possible, Sam Ash. They are our repair partners. They have seven locations in the tri-state area, and they will be repairing and refurbishing these instruments for a huge discount to allow us to do this. The New York City Department of Education, of course, and an amazing organization based out in LA called Mr. Holland's Opus Foundation, founded by the gentleman who wrote the score to Mr. Holland's Opus. He's a New Yorker, went to LaGuardia High School, and they have, for the last 15 years, been making it possible for public school kids across this country to get new instruments into their schools so they can improve their playing ability. We have two other additional key partners, Snug Harbor in Staten Island, and the Bronx Museum, obviously in the Bronx. And there'll also be drop-off locations because simply Sam Ash doesn't have locations in Staten Island or the Bronx. We need to make sure that the five boroughs will work it. We'll also have, this is list information, we will have cultural partners that we will ask them to advertise, promote, use social media, use stage speeches if they're able to get their audiences to think about donating an old instrument they have at home and don't need anymore. This is the basic, this is why it's not gone public yet. You can see we haven't hit these dates yet. We aim to go public with this in the early part of next year. A grassroots campaign, which is where I would really welcome your input. This is going to work if the community is engaged. We need PTAs, we need parent groups, we need mummy blogs, we need parent blogs to think about knowing, we need private schools, because we think that there's probably a higher majority of kids who are made to take music lessons at private schools because their parents told them to, that don't do it anymore, and they have the instrument at home and don't know what to do with it, than possibly anybody else. So we will need help there, and we will kick this off on the air on March the 1st. Sorry to make you reach inside. We're in the planning stages, right? So what's that? Sorry. Okay. We're in the planning stages right now. As I said, the drop off period is March 14th through the 24th. During April through September, that's when Sam Ash will be very, very busy repairing all his instruments, and where we will be matching the instruments that got donated to the schools with the greatest need. And again, we can go into how that's defined, but Mr. Holland's office have a very, very sophisticated methodology of how they match need, instruments to need. And in September, we will be doing a very exciting distribution event where literally all the instruments will be on some platform somewhere, and in the audience will be the kids and the teachers and the parent groups to literally come and collect the instruments and take them back to their schools. We need help with a venue there. We're talking to Yankee Stadium, but we need lots of other ideas because we're not sure Yankee Stadium will work. So if you have ideas of really big spaces you have access to, please let us know, because we don't have a budget to pay for them. So we have a very limited budget for this. So right now we're going through a lot of planning, communication strategies, website strategy. The drop-off, in case you're interested, people will bring the instruments to the drop-off location. We'll have forms that people fill out in triplicate, just like you do when you drop clothes off at Housing Works. You will decide how much you think your beaten-up clarinet is worth. We will not do that, because we don't want to be held responsible for the IRS coming after you. So if you decide it's worth $1,000, when you get audited, you can defend that. We will not be getting into that kind of business. We will attach a barcode to the instrument, attach a barcode to the donor, metaphorically, and we will obviously track the instrument very, very carefully. And our job and our goal is ultimately that you as the donor will know that your clarinet, your flute, your trumpet is now a PS something something in the Bronx. You won't know the kid that has it, you can't quite do that. But like you'll know that like actually your instrument is now working in a school that you know that it's not behind your couch, it's actually working every single day.
Excuse me, Graham, yes. Is the donee officially is WQXR? Because you may need to do donor acknowledgement forms for expenses.
So here's how we're doing it. Mr. Holland's Opus is the fiscal agent. We are not the fiscal agent.
So they just deal with it.
The pass-through goes through the Mr. Holland's Opus Foundation.
Good call. Good call.
We just say thank you. Again, our finance department did not want to get into the business of auditing. For the accountants or other finance experts around the table, you don't want to get into that. So Mr. Holland's Opus have all the mechanisms to do that. Again, but you as a donor name your price. Just like you do when you drop off 10 shirts at Housing Works, you can decide that they are shirts you bought at Hugo Boss or they're shirts you bought, at Uniqlo. You decide.
I actually work in Housing Works.
Okay, there you go. So,
you have to be careful. If it's actually valued over a certain amount, we get fined all the time. So right. If it's like over a certain amount, we have to report to the government.
So we have to do the same thing. There's going to be a bell curve of instrument prices. On the low end, your clarinet might be so beaten up that actually we can't spend the $75 that we told Sam Ash to spend no more than $75 repairing this clarinet. We will offer to give it back to you if you want, then you can keep it. Or we'll ask if you'll let us use it for parts, this key or this screw or something. On the other end of the bell curve, someone might not realize the value of the instrument that they just donated. Again, we will not just put that into the system. We will call you back up and say, hey, I don't know if you realize, but we think your instrument is worth $20,000 for a flute, or if you drop off a very expensive violin, it could be 50 to and up. So we will call you right back and say, we can officially appraise it for you. We will send it to an appraiser who will do an official job. and then we'll ask you, you can either come pick it up, or would you like us to sell it and put the funds into the budget? We don't know how many times that will happen, but this whole model actually is based on a very successful instrument drive that Colorado Public Radio have been doing for the last 4 years. And many things have been just basically copied from their very successful model. About 2 instruments a year go into that very high category that they sell. Most people say sell it and use it as part of your budget.
What about pianos?
No pianos. No pianos. So this is defined by the need in the schools. There are plenty of other organizations that donate pianos to public schools. One every year called the Sing for Hope Foundation donate about 78 pianos every year to New York City public schools. I'm not saying that impacts greatly, but it certainly gets that. We won't accept large brass instruments, no tubas. We won't be accepting percussion instruments. We won't be accepting pianos.
Wait for all those people who want to donate, and then you say we don't want it. I mean, I have a folder full of angry donors saying, no, seriously, right, it's a real problem. Yeah, right. You have to raise cash from these. So it's something your fundraising staff needs to know about. You're going to get a lot of angry people who are like, I want to do something really great for a student in a disadvantaged school.
Right.
If QXR wouldn't take my violin, I'm never going to give to you again.
Right.
Or
if it's
violin,
we'll take it. But I mean, right.
But trust me,
I get
so many angry letters from people who waited all day to give their sofa, and we get there, we're like, it's like, here, we don't want it.
Well, maybe
and they're like, why is my sofa not good enough for housing work? It's a big problem.
I'd love to chat with you offline about language to help that, because I think we obviously want to preserve relationships with
managers. At our gala, our host stood up and gave a story about how she was turned down.
If it's an instrument that you're not accepting, maybe beforehand
refer them to somebody else.
You could say so-and-so is collecting that instrument.
Is it only classical instruments, or might it be band instruments?
No, band instruments we can accept as well.
And
yes.
Guitars?
guitars, absolutely. Accordions, maybe not. Again, we haven't quite developed the 4 years yet, but in certain parts of the United States, in California, there's a huge mariachi movement in public schools. So a lot of guitars, 12-string guitars, 8-string, 6-string guitars, accordions, and other things are required for these mariachi programs. Not so strong here in New York, but there are other programs that are stronger here. So it kind of goes on geographic.
I have some ideas about how to encourage people to give instruments and some other things, but I wouldn't want to take up the time now. Should I email you?
Sure, email me, absolutely. Sure. As I said, I was going to rush to the end because I just wanted to leave a few minutes for questions. The distribution event is, we haven't quite landed the venue yet, but we do, we're going to do a kickoff event. We hope that the mayor will come to, the new mayor. We hope other dignitaries, that's on March the 14th, the first day of the drive. But the distribution event, this is where you get the kind of crying kids, the crying parents. It's extremely emotional as these schools possibly get, working instruments they haven't had in 10 years, and their band teacher is just beyond, excited, and their kids are beyond excited. But we need a really special place to do it. So if anyone has any ideas, and it needs to be a large space. You're talking about 1,000 instruments, possibly 1,000 people. We thought about Carnegie, of course. Clive Gillinson is a good colleague and friend, and we could do that. We'd love to find something that the media also might find kind of appealing. Yankee Stadium was kind of appealing to us. It's in the middle of playoffs. If they win, it's a little complicated. If it rains, it's a problem. So we welcome ideas. Chelsea Gears. Oh,
that's good.
Yeah, we have a connection there, right? But we welcome other ideas. But as I said before, you can either email me or we can quickly discuss this now. But again, community connections are really going to be important to make this happen. We've got a limited time frame where we can talk about this. We obviously have our microphone, and we have all our social media channels. We have WMIC's microphone and their social media channels. We have a small advertising budget, a very small advertising budget. So we
should also join forces with New York Cares. It does a co-drive every year. They're really really good.
Okay.
You'll pick up Chase, you'll pick up all these other sponsors with it if you co-brand it.
Okay.
Graham, would it be helpful if the CAB, which is one of our next pieces of business, is going to be sort of thinking about committees for us to work on different things? Would that be helpful to the station if some of us sign up for this particular project?
Yeah, and I have a program program manager for this whole endeavor, Kathleen Drohan, who's been part-time to this point, but now we've raised enough money to actually launch the project. So she's with us full time now, so she will absolutely be the point of call on my team to, we need ideas, we need great stories, and be really careful and be think about this. You know, I know from personal experience. This is very, very helpful for us to know, because as much as we can fend off angry folks in the beginning, that would be really helpful.
I wonder whether another grassroots connection would be churches, synagogues, other people.
Very good
point.
And
adopted public schools that yep. Particular, and lots of children who have stopped practicing.
Very good point. Yep.
You have also the school book project that's...
Yes, MIC school book project. Very important too. Yep.
Graham, you've mentioned a number of things that cost money.
Yes.
Can you make a specific list? I've been trying to pick out.
Okay.
You've got a full-time employee now.
So how much is the budget for this, basically? So the project budget, we've been able to... that's the best way to answer this.
I'm sorry.
No. I want to be... So we can do it for this price, or we can do it for this price. Yeah. You know, it's all like, you know, if you want to repair, you want to renovate your kitchen, you could, you know, go to IKEA, or you can have it custom. So we have a budget of about $210,000, which we call the austerity budget, which allows the bulk of the expenses, of course, to go to the instruments and getting as many of those repaired. It does not have much in there for advertising and promotion. If we can find more and more money, then we spend it on advertising and promotion, which gets the brand out there. Subway ads, you know, then it can get much, much bigger. So 210 is kind of where we are. We could, we have a the kind of the gold level budget is like 400,000.
That is, it's like a warehouse.
So what's that?
That includes a warehouse and trucks.
Sam Ash take care of all of that for the incredibly low price that they are agreeing. That this is a great, obviously, community build for them and a lot of brand awareness on the QXR platform. They're taking care of donating, receiving the instruments, repairing them, storing them, trucking them, and bringing them back to where we need them brought back to. That's one-stop shopping. People said, why don't you use this company? Like, we even talked to Manhattan Mini Storage, and so it got very complicated. The more times you move an instrument, two things happen. It breaks again, or it gets lost. And we don't want to say to a donor, can't find your flute.
And they're going to inventory them all.
Yes, exactly. And they have done this before. They have done this before. Yeah. So it's one-stop shopping.
Are all the instruments going to be given to New York Public Schools?
Yes. Or not? Select New York, but I mean, they have to apply. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mr. Holland's Opus Foundation have a very strict criteria based on their experience of doing this over the last 15 years. There's basically two criteria, which some feel are onerous, but we feel we're going to trust them on their experience. One, the school has to be a Title I school, which means a certain proportion of the kids are free lunch kids and come from less well-off families. The second is that the music program has to be in place for no less than 3 years. So we will not give instruments to a startup music program. The risk is if you do that, those instruments by the second year are sitting in a closet again because the principal lost interest, the music teacher was fired, and suddenly no one cares. Their empirical research shows that if the school's music program has been in place for more than 3 years, the likelihood of those instruments being used is much, much, much higher. And that's kind of what we need to...
You do realize that this is probably one of the hallmark watershed moments of us creating and touching a listenership that we have never been in touch with before.
That's why I want to do this.
Absolutely never been in touch with before.
I'm very proud of it. I'm excited that we've raised this money. I would love to raise more so we could make more people aware of this program because I think it's a very... I mean, I know I have an instrument. I mean, every time we speak to one, they're like, oh, yeah, I've got the trumpet sitting around. I don't know what to do with it. And it's like, just drop it off at a Sam Ash location. It's as simple as that, and you'll feel great.
Yes. Not only the people that are donating, but the end user,
yes, the families.
Yes. That it's just you know it's a moment that we really ought to think about how we're going to leave an impression to draw them in.
Yep. Yeah.
Are you going to have a year from now a concert in the green space with those schools or
that's a great idea. We have talked more. We have talked over and over again. And we have, but I think the evidence of how popular these kids' programs were on Saturday and with the Canadian Brass. We're doing our first ever event with the Third Street Music School Settlement in March with Angela Hewitt doing the masterclass for their piano students who come from all different backgrounds. I want us to be doing more and more of these kind of kids' concerts in the green space. So I think yes is the short answer. We haven't decided yet, but I think it makes a lot of sense. Yep.
Are you doing anything for teachers?
Around this program?
Well, in a
general
sense, yeah. Well, in general, but this program seems to sort of cry out for it in some way. Because it's going to be the people at the schools who really...
Yes. I wish we could... This has come up before, and we have struggled a little bit with, like, we feel... Some people have said, isn't an instrument drive a little off-mission for you guys? I don't see it as particularly off-mission. I feel that there is plenty of other organizations in the city who are doing great work to support teachers, and I'm a little worried that if we start doing that too, and we're getting into areas of curriculum and that we just don't know anything about. I'm a little worried. I'd rather let Carnegie Hall, the New York Phil, Lincoln Center Institute kind of keep doing that amazing work. If there were moments for us to bring their kids in, if their students into the green space, I think we do it that way. I'm a little worried about
anything.
I don't have the bandwidth of anyone on my team to start approving curriculum guides and all that kind of stuff. So the question down. Okay, sorry. Yeah.
Okay. I'm being naive. Economics of this. If the project actually yields 1,000 instruments,
yep.
I assume that the more come in, you'd be able to fix them. But
right.
If it were 1,000,
right.
If you're around,
right.
Then you're talking $200 to $400 per instrument, given your projected.
So there's
$75 repair cost. That seems like.
So there's $100 per instrument in the budget for repair, but then we have staffing costs. I had to hire that project manager for full time. I mean, that she's an experienced person. The bulk of the budget goes to the instruments, I can assure you of that. Then we have a promotion budget, we have a small PR budget, but the bulk of the instruments go to the event, the launch event, the distribution event, the repair of the instruments. We have the print form and all that kind of stuff. The bulk of that budget is a...
What's your estimate as to what the actual value of the only donated instruments would be? And clearly, sometimes instruments cost more than others do.
Yeah, you know, look, I know that when I bought my student flute, it maybe was $300 or $400 equivalent, like a couple of dollars. I don't know. You know, I just don't know. I mean, that's something we'll, that's for people to decide how much their instruments value is.
Okay. We've got about 5 more minutes for questions of any sort.
One question for you. Consumption of the digital media, is it an even distribution replicative of the analog medium, or is it skewing it younger or more diverse?
I don't know. Is the best way I can answer that. We haven't done as much research on the digital audience as we have on the terrestrial audience. We do know there's huge overlap between the two, and I'll take myself as a case in point. I have one radio in my house and two other digital radios, but they're all tuned to QXR, and it just depends which room I'm in. It depends what I'm listening to. We hear this more and more that people say, oh yeah, I listen to you on my Sonos system. That's the radio, right? It's like, no, actually, that's the internet, but it doesn't matter. People like are blurring the lines as to where they listen to radio. So we think they're a little younger. We don't have definitive proof of that. We do get a lot of comments, though, from parents. I mean, I love these comments that we get during pledge drives. A parent will write in and say, just want to let you know that, you know, me and my two kids listen as we drive to school every morning, and my kids, who are 6 and 8, and they're listening on the radio. They're not streaming it in the car. So, again, the bulk of the listening is still on terrestrial proportion, you know, and again, we're not seeing any trend that's being diminished significantly. But, again, a lot of cars are now rolling off production lines with 4G networks built into them. They're sending higher end cars right now, BMWs and Audis and that kind of thing, but it's only going to be time before a Toyota Corolla is going to come off in 2 years' time with a 4G network built in, and you'll be able to stream anything on your car radio. It's not a radio anymore. Yeah.
I'm wondering about, do you consider yourself a local radio station still with the streaming? Like, my dad lives in the Bay Area and he listens to QXR all the time.
So our strategic focus is on New York, but no, I have big dreams of us being a global brand. There's no doubt New York is the leading classical music city in the United States, one of the three in the world, and we do everything we can to project New York out, which we think makes us globally interesting. How do we do that? Things like Carnegie Hall Live, things like the leadership we've taken on these kinds of festivals, the digital leadership we've taken with videos, and you know, the more...
How does somebody learn about it?
Oh, that's What?
Listen to the news.
Well, people find us through social media, or friends will recommend it. When we do these live national broadcasts, obviously we're identified that it's coming from WQXR, so people say, what's that? And they can find us online. And we get more of these kind of, I used to live in New York, and now I don't, and I want to keep listening, because I love hearing about, you know, this particular concert, this theater that I used to go to, I now love hearing their underwriting. You know, we get really wonderful comments from folks like that. And it kind of builds on itself. The more head of steam you build nationally, the more folks find out about you. And we are seeing an increasing number of global
right.
Listeners
to. My dad's issue was the San Francisco station turned into kind of top 40 classical hits. And
with all due respect, yes, I would agree.
Right.
my colleagues at KDFC, yes, I would agree.
You know, and there are like economic reasons for that, so he was so excited when QXR started streaming. Yeah.
And we do hear a lot of this kind of, I live in so-and-so, my local station is dreadful, I found you, wow, where have you been all my life?
Right.
Yes.
I was wondering about the global brand because of the immigrant. I'm guessing that the people who are still living in China or India or wherever they are would also listen, and there's not a lack of actually digital access.
Right.
So is that something that the station's working on?
Absolutely. I can't go into details, but yes. You're very insightful. International expansion is something that's very much on my to-do list, and we're already working on it. Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you very much for
your
time.
And so thrilled. Thank you.
I think a lot of people are very interested in the instrument drive, so you might get.
If you do, it would be great to get like one person from representing a group to come sit with Kathleen and really go through some ideas.
Okay.
So, yeah. I welcome that.
Yeah, I think I will.
Kathleen Drohan, Drohan. And all our email addresses are, you know, first initial last name at WQXR.org.
Okay, so anybody from Judith mentioned she's going to put together a task force. We'll get those names of people who want to work with you, help you out, and share with you different resources. I'll make sure I get
to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we're right on time.
All right. So we were going to talk about committees. What would be the next step?
Yeah, I think we were hoping to focus on committees dealing with QXR.
Committees generally,
well,
actually.
Yeah,
but
and actually we can also have Sarah, if you want to talk about anything additional, because we gave you about 30 seconds earlier.
I guess right now, if anyone has any questions with how to do Facebook things and make sure you're signed up and all that. But if you do have questions, email me and I can walk you through it and give like step one, do this, step two, do this, and that sort of thing, because it's not intuitive at all.
Sarah, yes. Some people had to come in later and they may not all have this, so...
It's been emailed to whatever email address I got from Joyce, so you should have gotten an email with an Excel spreadsheet that's just... I started a schedule just so... You know, so we all have little assignments. So your assignment's either to create a post or to comment on it. So there are one person responsible each week for creating a post, four people responsible for commenting. And we'll go from there. And I would also ask that once you see that a post has come out on Facebook and you're commenting on it, to share it onto your personal feed, and that will expand the number of eyeballs that see it, because then all of the people that you're Facebook friends with will view that post and might share it or comment. Because we're trying to get more eyeballs on this, and it's just our personal networks that would do that. I sent it last night, and it's the email address that I used is on that sheet, so if that's wrong, please email me. I guess let Joyce know too, because that's the main email we have for you.
Okay.
I think Gary's is not, Michael Bauman's, I don't think that's correct, Michael. Would you look at your email address on there? Look at your email address on this long paper.
So should we ask if there are people interested?
Yes.
That's really what I was thinking.
And this is in particular.
Yeah. In addition to our social media committee, chaired by Sarah, last year we did have four or five different subcommittees. which dealt with things like recruitment, and we've had an election committee. Unfortunately, that's all settled. It came up with rules. And we never really did have a committee that dealt with WQXR. And one thing...
And WNYC.
And WNYC,
and we
yeah.
want to do the next event.
So one thing we wanted to discuss today is if there is a subgroup that's interested in one station versus the other, we can ask for volunteers so that we can focus more on things like the instrument drive, which is probably of interest to some people and not others.
Well, why don't we actually sort of list out possible committees? And the idea is two or three people will focus on whatever the committee is that you choose to be on, and by joining a committee, you'll just commit to being, you know, since all 15 of us, whatever it is,
17
aren't necessarily going to, you know, it's a little hard to coordinate that together, whereas if we break down into smaller groups that we know this is our responsibility to report back to the full group by a sort of given time. First of all, does anybody like the idea of doing that?
Report back about what?
Report back on the instrument drive, the progress, what's needed, report back on an event. I don't know if we actually determined what with WNYC, but we are putting an event together. It could be recruitment committee, which will be needed again in May, I guess, when people rotate off and we will need to
learn. No, much
earlier because...
And, okay.
Yeah. If I can add something to the recruitment part,
sure.
Jana Free, our legal counsel, just advised me today that CPB, because we're renewing our grant for CAB, CPB has a new criteria for diversity.
Oh, really?
And it's listed in this new 16-20-page document, and it's effective September 2014. So that's something that we're going to have to look at, and
okay.
it's going to affect some of your recruitment. You guys did a tremendous job. The last recruitment, this is wonderful to see what you guys around here, with so many different expertise, but it goes a little deeper, and so we're going to have to comply with that. So I'll
so will
introduce
you be,
it.
Great.
Okay.
So it's even more important.
You can add it to the agenda at that time.
Okay.
That would actually be in January to start, because we've done this recruitment a little bit too late and got caught up in prior years. So in January, we're going to start talking about specific criteria and then outreach by February so that we really have all of the interviews done by the end of May and the people able to be presented to the Board of Trustees by June. So
and
we're going to start early.
Okay.
All right, great.
So
and probably that would be at the committee level, but there'll be a few people you can represent.
You know, obviously the whole board has to vote on, but it's just...
Are you listing the committees that exist?
The things we've thought about, yeah.
Okay.
Recruitment's an easy one because we know we have to have that.
I mean, right now I have four, and perhaps people want more, perhaps people want fewer, and I think if everyone agrees to these four, I think the next thing is we should go ahead and ask for people to chair and to be on them, and then they can start operating. The first would be the WQXR, the instrument drive. Second is social media. Sarah's done a great job, bless you. She shouldn't really have to constantly be doing all the work, so I'm sure she would like some help. Recruitment is obviously going to be big. It's going to be different, working with Brenda on that. And then WNYC, whatever the event is, which I think we had started to talk about a couple of
meetings
ago.
Maybe I can just fill in a little bit there. I'll be talking with Graham as a follow-up next week to see what it is that he thought. He was talking to us about getting involved with the health initiative, which they feel is going to be very...
Dean.
That's right.
As far as the CAB's involvement in doing something on the health initiative, which WMIC thinks is going to be very big. Of course, from when he talked to us last month and what's been going on with the Affordable Care Act, huge changes. So I was away until 4:30 Saturday morning. So I asked if I could set a time to speak with him next week on that, and then I'll have a clear idea, and I'll email you. We're not going to wait till January to tell you what that is, but I'll be in email contact with you all about how he sees our proceeding together on that issue. And I assume the same for Graham, not only the instrument thing, but if there are other areas in which the CAB could work with his staff in whatever capacity he feels would work, so that there's a more ongoing relationship between both sections of New York Public Radio and the CAB. So
he had mentioned being happy to take our input into other festivals, right, for instance.
Yeah.
So that's something we can discuss it and give input. Yeah.
Exactly. This committee for working on WQXR and the group that wants to work with WNYC, it won't be just one thing that we'll be doing. So think of it that way. With QXR, it'll be the instrument drive, and it'll be basically more of a focus on QXR, and the same with WNYC. So,
do we agree for now? Would everybody like to say we've agreed, unless anyone has other suggestions, that, well, at least to start, and this, none of this is written in stone or immutable, that we're going to have four committees, one WQXR, which at least initially will focus on the instrument drive, to social media, which I think exists, but let's actually have a little committee there. Three, recruitment, which also is forms and reforms every year, but that's going to be a very important committee this year. And then finally, NYC committee, again, which will have a little more information, it sounds like, by January. So it's a little bit of a pig in a poke to want to agree to be on it, but I know we are planning to do an event. The CAB will be doing an event with the station, and it appears that probably it's going to be health-related, but it's not. There's been no final decision.
Right.
So didn't his I wasn't here last week, but I saw the write-up of the notes. So it wasn't clear to me if he was discouraging us from having an event and wanted
to He was discouraging us from doing one on our own.
Right. So I sort of agree with him on that. So is the consensus that it would be, you know, together?
Yeah, that's the point.
That's what we wanted to move towards.
Because that would be
we didn't have the option before.
So I gather it's to vote. Are we that far?
Well, all right.
So it sounds like these four committees are approved.
Yeah. Is there anything else that we're leaving out that people?
What was the prior structure? That's what I thought you were listening.
What did we do last year?
There were different.
At one point, the CAB was trying to
formulate
itself.
We had an open research thing, and that was kind of loosey-goosey, a research
There was a rules. So. There was something that came up with bylaws. We don't want to go through that again. It was very tedious.
No,
but
we
came up with, the bylaws make sense, but each bylaw had to be agreed upon.
So what you're proposing, the leadership team is proposing four committees for next year, which you've outlined.
That's right.
For now, for next month, January. Hopefully we'll get these in place.
For the rest of this year, through June of 2014.
And other committees that might come up.
Sure.
I'm not saying this is the be-all and end-all. You know, if we think of a need for something else, we can certainly add it.
But tonight we could take volunteers for all these, and so that...
Let's do one by one. After tonight, are there certain people who feel they would like to work on the QXR piece, work with that? Or you want to? Okay. Have you got those?
Gary, Luann, Ted, David.
Have you got it?
Which one, Nick?
Yeah, we can report it.
Okay.
She could tell the names, but we were quite important.
Do you get everybody?
Harry?
All right.
No,
okay.
I don't.
Okay. We'll write it down.
I can't see them.
Yeah, we can write it down and give you a list.
I'm more interested in the NYC side, but I'd like to work on the instrument drive.
Fine. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Fine.
I don't think.
We'll just check the names off here, right next to it, their name, WNYC. We'll just write on this attendance sheet.
Oh, let's
that makes it a lot easier.
Thanks.
All right. Gary.
I can do it. I'll do it. Yep, okay. I got it.
Gary, just read
it from the back. Yeah.
All right, just read them out again. Make sure you have everybody.
Okay. I have Judith, Luann, me,
David,
and Ted.
And Gary Brock.
And Gary for the instrument drive.
Okay.
And by the way, people could be in more than one committee if they have the time and interest.
Absolutely.
Right. And a committee on NYC? Is that...
Okay. Gary, Gary, May, and Joyce.
And Mike.
Mike. Mike. Oh, I didn't see Mike.
Joyce. Yeah. Sue.
Sorry.
Gary.
Huh? I
haven't
noticed
because
she's not the public
guy. Okay. And recruitment?
Last year. Meet lots of nice people. Yeah. It's a lot of work, but it's actually pretty interesting.
All right. The only thing about the recruitment is that we can do some work before, but the recruitment... Actually, recruitment committee that does the interviewing really shouldn't be any more than three people and three study people. We found out in the past that trying to coordinate schedules between those who need to be interviewed and those who the same three people being together all the time, very difficult. So when you get up to four or five people, it becomes impossible. So the actual selection committee will be...
Three. I think to be frank with you, that needs to be coordinated through Brenda and allowed to kind of be lodged there.
We haven't done that before. If the station is going to be the one in the selection, that's quite different.
Well, I think what you're trying to do, because the station's got a little more resources than we do as individuals, getting out into the community is a very important aspect of this whole drive to create a group of people that are going to meet the qualifications that we're about to see coming from CPB. That you got some issues there, right? I mean, you've got real...
We don't know that yet because we haven't seen them.
Well,
and Brenda gave us from lists of...
There's some issues, but what I think should happen is we should have more discussion about this. Right. We have a little bit of time. I want to share with you some ideas that I have. Mm-hmm. But there is definitely a way to utilize my resources. I'm not the community.
Well, we did that last time. Yeah. They got lists from
you.
I'm not
sure if it was successful with getting more messages offline. On air. Because as long as it's on air, we're speaking to the same people.
Also, strictly speaking, the Community Advisory Board is not supposed to be...
The Community Advisory Board is working the arm of the station.
Exactly.
However,
exactly. So we have to be a little careful there.
Well, the chair actually is the one who asked us to collaborate, so they've made some changes, which they've actually asked for. So you're right. They're an independent arm.
Right.
I'm only suggesting that I be involved to help expand the resources, because we've been through this.
Right.
Which you probably missed a couple of...
I followed, I did read it.
Well, I mean, if there's a new regulation that we have to follow, obviously we have to
see what it is. What is CPB? Yeah, what is this?
I don't know the details.
There are government rules.
I used to work at Channel 13.
So they give us a grant to have the CAB. We know that the CAB is an arm of the station. They run independently, all that. But there's some new criteria. Yeah.
But so if there was actually a regulation, we would follow.
Can we spend that money?
No, you can't spend that money. It's not about that. It's not about
these emails to us.
What
does it pay
for?
I don't know.
If we're saying, we should look at the budget.
It's kind of interesting because
I'm not sure if the grant is money per se, but there is a license that suggests that we have to have a cab, which is part of the FCC license.
Exactly.
I need to get more details. I'm going to read that document.
And it's supposed to be like a
monitor. We'll have a better station. I'll share it with Joyce and chance. We can read it, we can understand it, and we can share it.
Yeah.
And then we'll know what direction we're going. I didn't mean for us to stop and... But we will figure out how to go forward based on some of the new criteria and based on information that you just don't know. But we can share.
That's fine.
So we'll do that more in January when Brenda knows more about it.
But I just got the document today.
So in the meantime, however, is there anyone who would like to see the world, meet new people? Or
John? Okay.
John,
great.
We can't have a committee of 15.
Mm-hmm. Anyone, John just volunteered.
Yeah, John volunteered. Anyone
Anybody else?
This is all
perhaps.
We just
said
we have a lot of people.
We'd like to let somebody else have the fun.
No, it's fine. It takes some time, as you can imagine. We interviewed 20 plus people.
Yeah, I think so.
23.
I guess the question is, are we going to, we were looking for a pretty large number of people. Are we going to be looking for a large number of people? Do you know what the...
Well, I think our rules say we can have up to 25.
25.
And we have 17 now, so we can obviously have at least 8 new members if we choose to, and some people will be leaving. Yeah.
Yeah, some people are term limited, some people may...
Well, that's
very
was,
few, yeah.
That's what I was like asking one, about. Yeah. How many people are term limited? Because we had said we didn't want to go up to 25.
Right.
Yeah.
I think next year only one, I think Michael is.
So if it's not as big a, if it's not as big a group, I could do it, but I can't do 3 weeks in a row the same group, you know, that...
Well, that's the problem. So let's wait till January and we see what the criteria is and how many we're looking to recruit and how we go about the outreach. And we'll see.
And then also social media.
Put it down tentatively.
So Harriet is a maybe.
Yes.
A reluctant maybe.
We'll recruit Harriet for the recruitment.
And Sue, would you like them?
I mean, it sounds like we need an ad hoc committee to figure out the new regulations and what this is going to be,
the criteria,
separate from actually recruiting. Well, no, I think that we need an ad hoc committee to figure out what's going on with this, separate from the actual recruiting process.
Yeah.
Okay.
And finally, social media. Who wants to?
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Anita Abelacia.
Right. Page. We're all set. Excellent.
Okay.
Great. That's great.
Okay. Good. So. All right. So we have.
Yeah.
All right. So we have someone. I think everyone here volunteered for one of them, which is
great.
Uh-huh.
And I think we can.
Yeah, okay, and so our next item is, public comment, yeah. Although I think the public already had some chances to ask questions. But we always have a few minutes for non-members to... Yes, sir.
I came specifically to express my opinion about something related to the station's operation. And that is the my disappointment with the lack of attentiveness to the updating of the website. Over the course of the summer, and into the fall, and as recently as Sunday, and last week, special programming that I think are the highlights of what you're doing are shown on the website. Nobody needs a website that shows the week in and week out programming. Everybody knows what that is. The whole point of having a website, in my opinion, when you're doing special programming is show those programs on the website. There's been a consistent failure to do that.
That's the station's website.
And I have complained to the
Listener Services
a number of times, not the last couple of times, but it doesn't seem like complaining gets to a high enough level to put more manpower on it and be more attentive to it. If you're trying to reach an international audience, you know, people in different time zones, don't listen to announcements throughout the day that might talk about some of these special programs. They can go to the website. So it seems to me that's an important issue that needs to be addressed.
Okay, thanks.
And I've seen it over a long period of time.
Which special programs?
Well, like Matt O'Coin's program that ran on Sunday night was just listed as special programming.
And that ran
during the week, earlier Tuesday or something like that. And wasn't listed at all. I happened to turn it on 10 minutes before 11 o'clock to hear Bill McLaughlin. And I caught the tail end of it. I didn't even know it was on. I went and looked at the schedule, and I usually look at the schedule in advance, specifically for that reason. Went back, looked at the schedule. Wasn't on the schedule. Did a screen save just to have a document showing it wasn't there.
Did you ever get any response from your...
No. They called back if I leave a message and they're polite and they apologize. I don't need apologies.
This question has become even more obscure in the new format. I mean, it used to be very difficult to find down at the bottom in tiny letters, but I don't even think it's there now. I think you have to know enough to do a search for the CAV.
And we're supposed to be a separate arm. We're not supposed to be completely part of the websites. I think most of the people that signed up in this past round that are on the board for the first time this year found the information through the website.
Do I need information for the public to know when board meetings are scheduled? Oh, I heard a lot of announcements.
And also we do list it on the Facebook page as well. So there's another outlet that we have that keeps us separate from the station, which we like.
And my Tumblr.
Would you explain to me again what you mean by special programs?
Programs that are not routine weekly programs, like special programs like the Salzburg Mozart Fame concerts.
I see.
Maddow Coins programs.
This brings up an issue that we've struggled with for a long time. The Community Advisory Board and the concerns that people have and how they get to the station and to the people who need to know about them. So, Brenda, do you want to talk to that?
I think the way we're going to handle this is because this complaint came to the board at a meeting. The notes are going to indicate that this happened. Joyce is going to specifically pull this out as an issue that she should send to me, and I will take care of making sure it gets into the right hands so that they're looking at it and understanding that this was an issue. We need to get back to the person. Let them know what we might be doing. I do know that on our website we do have the carousel, so I'm not sure what's in rotation, how they figure out priorities based on, I'm sure, numbers of who's listening. But if there's an explanation, I'm hoping that we can get it so that we can share it with the public again, or specifically with the person.
What do you mean by carousel?
I'm sorry? What do I mean by carousel? Is on the website, there is this revolving tout, if you will, where there's an image and a program. And I'm looking at it on my phone now, and it really just goes through four, five, or six different things, so we call that a carousel. So once that event comes on, then another event will come. That'll come down, and another one will go up. So that's how they keep that fresh, if you will.
I don't think I've ever seen the type of program.
But it's right at the top of your...
It's sort of a flipper, but you're asking for the schedule. They want you to have the schedule.
Well, you said special programming, so I want to refer to what's special, because the schedule stays the same, correct?
The schedule doesn't stay the same. Special programming gets inserted in the schedule.
It just says, like, to be announced.
And that's usually what they might put on the carousel. So we'll figure out. I don't know the answers, but, again, did I answer your question, Ellen?
No, I just wanted to make sure that
It'll get to me and I will take care of it because I am the liaison. I'll make sure it gets to the proper person.
Yeah. Okay, can you follow up with you directly?
No, she should not follow up with me directly. It's going to be Joyce. She is the chair or Joyce, whoever she assigns, but not with me directly because it's going to go through Joyce.
Well, what happens when they do contact Listener Services? Does it have to come back to
normally,
us again?
No. Normally, if something goes to Listener Services, and it's dependent on the department. I've got emails from Listener Services that ask me questions like, somebody's trying to go to your singles event, they can't do this, whatever it might be. And I've gotten back to them immediately with an answer. And they get back to the person, or I'll say, I'll reach out to them, depending on the situation.
But that's what I think I'm hearing, that he didn't find out from Listener Services.
Well, I can go back to Listener Services and tell them, and then we can keep that thread going, or we can take it another direction. That's why I said he would be the person this time.
I just wanted to take it out of that information. It's not that I need an answer. It's a problem.
But we'll report the problem. Absolutely. The problem will be reported from this meeting. And that's what he wanted. That's what we'll get.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions from the public? Questions? Complaints? Going once, going twice? Okay. We've got 15 minutes to go, and the only thing we really need to talk about, I think we've talked about our next meeting, so people are clear, the next meeting is at the Society of Ethical Culture, 63rd and Central Park West. 64th? And 63rd, I think.
It's the whole block.
January. No meetings in December.
January and February are there. January what?
The final thing we are...
the 16th.
We have
January
time for
27th.
And are there concerns, questions, things people want to bring up for new business?
Yeah,